And welcome back to the Highbury Squad. We're doing it old school today. We are doing a pod without seeing our faces, which will probably be a joy for a lot of people. Anyway, today joining me on this very hot July day is my sister from La La Land. All right, Soph?
I'm very well, thank you, Amanda.
I'm wondering if we're hotter than you today. It's about nearly 29 degrees here.
I don't think anything ever gets hotter than California, and I'm not talking about the weather.
You haven't seen what I've seen recently to say that. Anyway, and my bruv, our bruv Soph is back. Kev, how you doing?
I am fantastic. How are you, ladies?
Super Kev, Super Kevin Campbell. Yeah.
Sophie, I love it, darling.
I love you.
You keep going, darling. Love you.
What, Kev? If I started singing, you wouldn't love it. You know that, don't
no,
you?
No, I definitely wouldn't. I'll battle you. Sophie gets away with so much, doesn't she?
I know. It's so unfair how much I get picked on, honestly. And you wouldn't believe that I'm older than you. And you
by the way,
your elders.
Amanda, by the way, PG, you get picked on.
Oh, I know, right?
Like anyway, moving on.
Can you believe that?
I'm the host today, so you have to be controlled by me.
Yeah, very true. Okay, very true.
Okay, so joining us today, who I'm so excited, I'm honestly really excited, one of my favourite guests, and we've had some brilliant guests on, is one of the funniest men in podcasting, I have to say, is my new friend. Well, hopefully by the end of the show, he still will be. It's Mr. Ian Stone. Hello, Ian.
Hello, everyone. Nice to see you. Thank you. I know it's, oh, bless you. It's nice to get a round of applause.
But round of applause, mate.
I've got like a song, actually.
But I was going to say, I'm sorry, I don't have a song for you.
But I was going to be really, really like over friendly and call you Stoney because I listen to Tuesday. Yeah. I couldn't. Maybe at the end. Okay.
You can call me Stoney. It's absolutely fine. I don't mind at all.
I feel like I'm Ellen Davis. I've come all over funny. Honestly.
What, you mean you're not going to let me get a word in? Is that what you mean?
No, but I have to be honest. You weren't on this week. And Teo said something so funny that when I was walking, I laughed out in the park when he went, well, yeah, we didn't really play Spurs because if there's no fans in the ground and it's in July, it doesn't. And people look at me when I'm listening to the Tuesday Club podcast, honestly. Anyway, I could talk about that all day, but we're not going to.
Okay.
So thank you so much for joining us. We're not as professional as Alan.
Speak for yourself.
Ian and
what does that actually mean, by the way?
Nothing in terms, these days,
I mean, we're just chatting, right? Aren't we?
Exactly. That's what we do. And we divert into loads of different things. But so thank you for joining the Highbury Squad. I'm not sure if you've listened to us before, but Kevin picks on me, Sophie picks on me, and I just walk off crying. That's exactly what happens, isn't it?
Oh. It sounds lovely.
You sound like Nicholas Anelka right now. I'm getting picked on. I mean, come on.
Isn't Nicholas Anelka? There's going to be some sort of Netflix special about him.
Yes. That came out today.
Yes.
Wonder what that's about. Yeah.
Can't wait to see it.
I can't wait to see the Tottenham Amazon one. That's going to be flipping hilarious. I'm sorry. That on a season like that, it's just brilliant. So, Ian, thanks for joining us. What we're going to do, we're going to chat everything Arsenal, of course, and then we're going to talk to you about your new book that you've got out.
Right.
So, I don't know when, listeners, was the last pod we did because we've done different ones over the last few months, but I know for a fact we have not spoken about Spurs or Liverpool. We do have to speak about Spurs. I know none of us want to. And I was absolutely devastated. And does anyone else find it really bizarre? You get really excited for a game. You sit down. I have to have crowd noise on because I can't have silence. And then it's like a training match. And it's not real. Fans make football. Don't you agree, though?
I do. I feel like it's a little bit though, like, I'm not sure, like going to a dysfunctional family event or something where sometimes we used to go visit my grandma and everyone would be sitting in a room and it'd just be dead silence, you know, and then the next minute you feed Greeks and you give them some, you know, booze and stuff and it's kind of crazy and raucous and everything. And so I'm torn between the noise and not the noise because it's so fabricated. Like here with the MLS tournament they're doing now, it's so fabricated. It actually gave me a headache. the other day with the LA Galaxy game. I had to switch it off. So I think we're just trying to get through this a little bit like a family event. Look, we're going to go, we're going to say hello, and then we're going to leave. You know what I mean?
You know what was funny about the Tottenham match? Of all the matches I've
nothing,
watched,
nothing was nothing, funny about the Tottenham.
Funny. I know. Absolutely nothing. But what was strange for me was I actually turned the crowd noise off because they only played Tottenham songs. Now, when you listen to other teams we've played, they play a bit of Arsenal and a bit of the other team, a bit of Arsenal, a bit of the other team. Tottenham, it was all just Tottenham. And after 10 minutes, I said to my other half, I cannot listen to the Tottenham song anymore. We're going to go silent. It is so typical them, isn't it, to do
We lasted 7 minutes before I said to my son, I said, I can't have this. This is awful. I can't have this in the house. It's disgusting. So we turned it off. Although there was still the sound of Martin Tyler talking about hairdressing with Alan Smith.
It was terrible.
What the hell? And do you know, by the way, he reiterated it on Wednesday.
He went again.
He did Alan Smith's accent as well. And I'm just imagining the producer in his ear going, leave it, Martin. Get off. Just talk about something else. Would he stop it? I turn off the commentary as well as the set of the crowd noise? It's awful.
But did you see what Ian, Martin said to Alan about the sandwich or the hairdressing thing again. And Alan went, it's not funny the first time. Sort of died a sort of death. And I was like, oh, Alan, that's funny.
Been there as well. But when you do a joke that doesn't really work, you do is you go, the thing is, I need to explain it to you. Maybe you didn't understand it. I don't usually wait 4 days. I've got to be honest with you. I mean, I just imagine Martin Tyler on the Sunday evening and the Monday going, I don't think he got it. I'll try it again, but in his accent. That might work better. We're sitting there. My son says to me, is he drunk again?
I said he's had a drink because you would not. I mean, he must have seen some of social media between those 3 days because we slaughtered him everywhere. I thought I was going mad. I was sitting there going, why is he talking about sandwiches? I didn't really think much of it. I wasn't on Twitter at the time. And I was like, what is he going on about? And then I realised it became viral, this thing. But anyway, that was the only funniest thing about the Tottenham game. That's it. Kolasinac is not funny. Mustafi is not funny.
Mustafi is funny to everyone else.
You look at it. Yeah.
It's perspective. Mustafi and Luiz and Kolasinac are not funny to us at all because we've seen too much of that nonsense. But for everyone else, I imagine it's hilarious. It's like Arsenal fan TV, right?
Yeah.
Similar vibe. You know?
It's the sort of thing where you just sit there and you go like, Lacazette scores a screamer. We go mental, right? Like screaming a place down. I haven't even had time to sit down and Kolasinac does that. And it just takes the whole thing out of the game, doesn't it? And even Lacazette at the end when he was interviewed, the guy said to him, you know, you scored a wonderful goal. He said, it means nothing. We lost, which is very true.
No player trusted him after that. Tierney didn't want to pass to him. And KC, as a player, when you're on the pitch and someone does that, it just feels like with certain players in it, and because I try to observe what happens after, like with the trust of the other players, Tierney literally did not want to pass to Kolasinac for 20, 30 minutes after that. And as a player, especially, like when your forward scores a cracker like that, KC, and then a defender makes a mistake, I think the air went out of the team. Like mentally, we're not talented enough mentally yet to recover from something like that yet. And that's the problem. We can't recover in those moments. We've lost 21 points from leading positions this season. That is really shocking. And the team just lost it after that. And that's one of the biggest things that we have to work on and trusting each other. It was really tough to watch.
So I think what tends to happen is we all know when you score, you say for the next 5 minutes, let's keep it tight. That's what you're supposed to be going around saying, especially a derby. You know, you score a cracker, you get your nose in front. If we're honest, Spurs were on the ropes. Spurs were on the ropes. They were absolutely crapping themselves.
Yep.
And then what do? We go and shoot ourselves in the foot.
Yeah, but Kev, no one surprised, right?
Ian, here's the thing though, mate. Here's the thing. And here's the thing that I'm sure all gooners couldn't believe, whether you played football or not, you just couldn't believe. Kolasinac was under really no pressure.
Yep.
You could see where Son was and you see where Louise was. Now, schoolboys would play it on the left-hand side of Louise.
Yeah.
Because he's away from the forward.
Yeah.
That's what you do. But to actually play it to the space in between him and Son for the goal. I mean, after the joy of going ahead and obviously watching Son go through and finish it pretty well, but, you know, it was a great through ball by Kolasinac.
It was.
No one's going to trust him.
No.
Sophie, nobody's going to trust Kolasinac because if he's going to do that under no pressure, what's he going to do when he's pressured? So, you know, it kind of, everyone started going on the back foot then, and then they started coming into the game. And it was just mayhem after that.
Can I just jump in here? I find interesting about all this is the incredulity in all your voices. I can't.
You're bloody right, Ian. It is incredulity. You know what I mean?
What happened? So sad.
I mean, have we learned nothing? I mean, you must have seen Arsenal play in the last couple of years. Can I just say that our back three was Kolasinac, Louise and Mustafi?
Oh, my God.
Can we just get that in our heads?
It sounds like a terrible law firm, to be honest.
It's criminal is what it is.
It is criminal.
And you know, one of them's going to have a mistake. I mean, the amazing thing about Wednesday is that we didn't have too many balls ups. We had one and we got away with that. But it's always going to happen. And Mikel Arteta knows that. And that's why he's, at the end of Wednesday, he stood up and went, I need money to replace the team. And he didn't name them, but we all know who.
Well, it's interesting, jumping forward to Liverpool, I was literally watching behind the sofa. I've got so many Scouse friends anyway, and I'd actually said months and months ago, if you get to the Invincible Day and you come to the Emirates, we will beat you. I did say that,
but
I didn't know they'd have won it by then. We wouldn't have won, Kev, if they hadn't won the league by then, that's for sure. But
how do you know?
Because no way. But
no,
still
no, 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 don't. Don't ever reckon that this Liverpool team have got the flip-flops on when they're going for the points. Trust me.
Yeah, but they don't care about that. They've won the league for the first time in 30 years.
They cared.
It does matter.
They cared. They wanted to win that game big time. Turned
into Mustafi, right, which was the funniest thing I've seen. You've got Alisson doing that. I mean, we've all watched them over the months, haven't we? Oh, Kev, no way would they have played like that if they hadn't won the league. Sorry.
They made mistakes. I'm so tired of hearing they're on the beach and stuff because 2 days prior, it was they're going for the record, they're going for this, they're going for... And every single time they tried to reach a milestone, everyone's raved about them.
Remember, they probably don't care. They've won the league.
Amanda. They care about being the best team ever. They do. They bloody care.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, okay, I take that point that they do care, but they've lost, five games since the restart, haven't they? Something mad, isn't it? Five games in the last 13. I mean, they've eased off a bit, haven't they? I'm not saying they're not trying, but Kev, you must know this. Surely that extra couple of percent when you're going for it.
Ian.
I like that. Go on, Kev. Tell me.
Let me enlighten you.
Go on.
This Liverpool team over the last two seasons have been on a tear that like we've never seen before. They lost the league by 1 point the previous season. Then they go virtually the whole season unbeaten this season. It's going to hit the buffers at some stage. It is going to. That's just the way football works.
It's not on the beach, is what you're saying.
It's definitely not on the beach. And I don't know how... I don't know if Liverpool would be more upset about that or Arsenal should be. Because to think that this Liverpool team is going to be on the bench with a manager like Klopp, no chance. If they're on the beach, they wouldn't create so many chances. And we would have had more ball. Trust me, they wanted to beat us out of sight. The fact of the matter is, what shocked everybody was how Arsenal defended.
Yeah, it was pretty good, wasn't it? I mean, it was actually like we could actually defend.
And Louise was in the team. There you go.
Yeah, but
who was playing at the back?
But he was in a back three, wasn't he?
He was in a back 10, to be perfectly honest, in the last 15 minutes. But there was a point, because we spoke to James Gunnerblog, and he was in the stadium, and we had a corner about 2 minutes from the end. And I'm saying to my son, I think we should put one up, right? Everyone else should just be on the halfway line. And we're just trying to work out it'd be best. But at one point, David Luiz starts trotting forward. And Martin says, where the hell are you going, David? He's telling him to get back. And I like that in the goalkeeper. I like that he was telling him what to do. David doesn't really have a clue about that sort of stuff. But you know what? He did. He defended all right the other day. And fair play to him.
Yeah, we are absolutely bipolar, honestly, in defending. You can never call it. You know, when we started playing against Spurs, I'm never confident. I hate the match. I just hate, feel sick the whole time leading up to it as well. And as we were playing, I thought, we've got Spurs here. We've just got to take some chances. Now, my dad's favourite saying is, if you don't take chances, you don't win games. And if I didn't see that 18 times on my WhatsApp during the first half, and I kept thinking, okay, you know, we've got this. We've got this. Arteta's not stupid. The players want this. Tottenham, as everyone keeps telling me, have been shit, and everything else. And then we didn't have it. And then we gave it to them. We did give it to them. I don't care what anyone says.
What was the difference in the Liverpool game?
Well, you know what, babe? Sometimes when you've been so humiliated, you're like the wounded lion. You come out, you've got a point to prove. Arsenal wanted to beat Liverpool. I'm sorry, Kev, much more than Liverpool wanted to beat Arsenal.
No, but he removed some of the wounded, didn't he? And he replaced them with proper lions.
He's playing every 3 days. He's now got to think about City. We're recording this the day before City, but this is going out after City. So we don't know the result, but we're going to discuss it. You know, I am far worried, more worried than playing City than I was worrying about playing Liverpool, because I'd watched them over the last couple of weeks and they really weren't at it. And I kept saying to my friend, we've got a chance getting a draw here. You know, I was happy with a draw if we would have got it. But anyway, right, so we did defend, we did beat them, we beat the champions, and it's fantastic.
It was beautiful. It was, when did you properly commit, by the way? Because up to about 75 minutes, I thought, you know, I'd probably even take a narrow defeat here, to be honest with you. And then we got to about 75, 80 minutes, I thought, oh, maybe a draw's on, maybe a draw. And then 87 minutes, I'm thinking, come on, I think we could actually win. Okay. It's hysterical.
So at 88 minutes, I'm getting more and more angry because the clock's going slow. Yeah. I went out the room into the kitchen and I said to my other half, I'm not coming back in until the final whistle. I've had enough. My nerves were shot to pieces because I kept going, oh, I'll take a draw here. Yeah, I was doing exactly the same thing. Not a loss, but, oh, we could get a draw. I was like, plutzing. I was like, oh, yeah. No, I can't cope. Can't cope. Keep looking at the clock. And I'm like, how are we beating Liverpool? We couldn't even beat Spurs. And it's like mental. And I came back in and I went, oh, my God, we won. Honestly, Ian, the whole game, I never even thought we had a chance of drawing.
Amanda, you know, George, KC, my cousin George, he couldn't. He goes, I can't take another defeat, like Tottenham, then Liverpool. So he kept WhatsApping me. Is it over? Is it over? Is it over? I go, why don't you just watch the bloody game instead of asking me every 30 seconds if it's over? He goes, I can't do it anymore. But I just want to say one thing, and it was one of those games, a little bit like when you go out and you see someone who's a little bit hotter than you, and you're like, I might give that a try. I mean, you know, when you know that maybe they're out of your league a little bit. I don't know what it was about that game, but from the very beginning, I really fancied us to win that. And
you did, didn't you? Yeah.
I put it out there as well, stupidly at the time, and I was like, I'm going to get ripped for this. You know, especially if we end up losing like 6-1.
But there was something
about it, Ian, that I thought, you know what? Really? I thought Arteta's got to show here that he can coach up from losing to Tottenham the way we did. He's got to make adjustments. And that's why I wanted to see. I think more than anything, I was hoping that he would do that. But there was something about it that I thought we would bounce back.
I saw that tweet and I thought, you're deluded.
Yeah, no, I actually responded with crazy biatch, didn't I? Yeah. When someone said something to me, I went, she's just a crazy biatch. She
fair play. Do you think we'll beat City, by the way?
No.
2017, let's do a repeat. Right, Casey? No. 2017
I think
all
we've
over
got
again.
A chance.
No. Kev, how?
I think just I look at, you know the first game back after the restart?
Delusional.
Oh, yeah.
Would you just listen for a second?
Yeah.
Please. The first game back after the restart, and until David Luiz made that cock up,
there
was not much in it. We'd had a couple of breaks, but we never hurt them. Mm. And City weren't firing in all cylinders. We actually handed them the initiative, and that's what killed us in the end. Yeah, they're a great side, and then they start picking you apart. But do you know what? In that first half, I think it was, 44 minutes or whatever, I thought to myself, do you know what? Arsenal are doing all right here. They are nullifying them in midfield and attack. City are gonna create chances no matter what against anybody. But we were doing all right. Now, obviously, we're a lot further on into the restart now. The players have beaten Liverpool. The players are fit now. We can give them a game. I'm telling you, we can.
Kev, it's the hope that kills you. I'm sorry. Kevin De Bruyne.
Amanda, can Arsenal beat City? Of course they can.
Of course they can.
Are Arsenal the favourites? No, they're not. I'm not saying Arsenal are the favourites. But I'm just talking up Arsenal, that Arsenal can get a result. Yeah, we need a little slice of luck or two slices of luck. But can we beat them? Of course we can beat them.
This is exactly what people were saying, Amanda, in 2017. No one gave us a chance going into the semi-final. And then the final, especially when Per and young Rob put on the masterclass of a defensive performance, which is why Rob Holding has to play this weekend. Okay, I don't want to hear anything about it. He's got to start. This kid is ready to prove himself. Like he keeps getting overlooked. Yes, he's had injuries and stuff like that. But I see this as a little bit like when I'm flying. If the plane makes it through the first 20 minutes, we're good to go, right? If we don't concede within the first...
I'm not sure I get on the plane in that.
No, nor do I.
If that's the odds, I think, you know what? Maybe I'll leave it. I'll have a staycation.
We'll still have a Birkham.
But if we don't concede early, I think our confidence will grow. That's the ticket to staying in this game, is don't concede early.
Okay, this is interesting because people will be listening to this after the game. Okay, so I think we're going to get stuffed. Soph, what do you think? Go on, do a prediction.
I think that we are going to be... I think Arteta has learned. Super Kev is right from that very first game back against City, the worst game we could have had coming back from the COVID break and everything.
What's your prediction?
I think we're going to win in extra time.
Okay. Kev?
Arsenal win. I'm positive on it.
Okay. And Ian?
I can't see any way that we can beat them. You never know.
No, I know.
I love your optimism. I genuinely do.
Yeah, I do. They're delusional, but there we go. No, I love them. And if we win... Right. If we win, I will do a video saying how wonderful you are, Kev and Soph, okay? Because I'm not doing any more prediction videos. They're finished. The last one I did, we just got stuffed at Tottenham or wherever he was. So that's it. But let's hope I am totally, me and Ian are totally wrong, that when you listen to this, you can laugh at us. That would be lovely, wouldn't it, Ian?
I think we're going to see again another growth. Period in Arteta as a young coach of this team. He's the penny's dropped this week, and after that loss to Tottenham, as an ex-Arsenal player, that burned. That really burned.
I think too inconsistent. I think that's that tweet I put.
No, but he's only got what he has to work with, right? So now he gets it a little bit more.
You know, I love Arteta. But it's not his fault.
Listen, guys. If we get beat, we get beat. Listen, we've lost to them a couple of times already this season. So if we get beat, listen, there's nothing, you know, you can expect that. But I just think in a one-off game, this Arsenal team can beat City.
And also, Kev, I don't know how hot it is in Manchester, but down here in London at the moment, tomorrow's going to be like this. So actually, it's an evening game, but it does all depend who plays better in the heat. Because lot are not used to playing mid-July. You know,
all their Spanish players won't be able to handle the heat at all. Really.
Reveling it, won't they? Yeah, reveling.
Foreigners from Belgium. That's why.
Yeah,
So
they've never had a hot day in Belgium, have they? Never, never.
Hilarious.
It's known as being cold Belgium.
They're going to get their little water breaks and orange slices, so they'll be just fine.
Sick of that. You, by the way. I'm just...
Oh, I hate it.
We don't need it when it was about 14 degrees and raining. They will need it tomorrow because it is going to be really, really hot. But
no, it reminds me of coaching here in AYSO, Casey.
Sophie, just quickly. I think Arteta needs the bloody water breaks to speak to the guys. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah,
I really think it's helped him as a coaching point to the team. Yeah. So sorry, I just wanted to make that point.
No, that's something
like American football, though, like with this stop-start nonsense and 18 minutes of extra time at 90 minutes. It's like it does my head in. And the thing is, at the moment,
weird, though, isn't it? Everything is weird. The fact there's no crowd is just.
But Ian, you look forward to it, as I said. Like you get really up for it, like it's an away game, and I'm not going. And then you sit down and it's like a training mat. It's so
hard.
Weird.
It's hard to get into the atmosphere of it because there is no atmosphere. And I find that difficult. Although, as you said, the crowd noise thing, when they had Man City the other week, Man City have got a sarcastic cheer button. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
And I'm quite impressed with a sarcastic cheer button, right? When a free kick went their way and it was the first one in a while. It was, finally, ref. And
oh, I loved it. Brilliant. Except Tottenham, you know, if any Tottenham fans, friends of mine are listening to this, have a word. You can't just play your songs the whole way through your match because it's not only your match, it's someone else's playing as well. Anyway, I'm just having my little rant about that. Yeah. So let's move on to the fact that what have we got left? A couple of matches after the semi? I've lost track.
But hold on a second. With the semi, right? Mm-hmm. With the semi. If we do beat City, and look, why wouldn't we bank on ourselves? We're the best FA Cup team in history. Oh. There's no denying that. We're actually we're first at something. So I'm gonna ride that train, right? So if we do beat City and this Pep team that's going for another what? They count trophies nowadays where, you know, like all of a sudden City are up for three trophies or whatever. But I just think it would be one of our best with or without fans. If we beat this City team after having the worst season since Ian and Amanda, you've witnessed as fans since the late 70s or whatever, this would be one of this would be the best win in a long time, a signature win for Arteta to do this would be huge, you guys.
We know both, but anyway, I can't see it.
I'm getting all riled up. Already.
You are, and then the listeners are not going to hear this till night Monday, so it could I could be being laughed at, which as we said would take. But the FA Cup final's on my birthday weekend, which has never happened in my life of being born. I'll be 51, and we're playing the cup final the day later. It's bizarre, and the fact that I live 40 minutes from Wembley, and I've never missed a final since 1980 was the one I missed, and then the first one I went to was 87. So I know it sounds funny, and this is gonna not go down well, but I'll be pissed off if we get there because I can't go. And it's so bizarre that they're gonna play a final at Wembley. Why can't they just play it at a neutral little ground?
Get used to it because fans aren't gonna go back anytime soon.
Well, I don't know. Someone just said that Boris is talking about October getting a few fans in, but we'll have to wait and see.
Ian, have you been to every final? Have you been to every FA Cup final, mate?
No, I missed a couple I missed Southampton and Man United. Southampton won when we won 1-0 and Pires scored. And I missed the Man United when we just mugged them and then got them on penalties. But I've been to every other one since 78, including European ones and the League Cup when we lost.
So did you go to 79, Ian?
Yeah, I went to 79, 78 was my first one. 79... was I 79? You had to get tokens in the program. I don't know if you remember this.
Yep.
You had to collect the tokens, and I lost one of my tokens, so I didn't get my ticket. So I had to queue round the Arsenal Stadium, round Highbury, for about 14 hours. And I got in about 9:30 at night, having got a cup final ticket. And I went, I've got a cup final ticket. And my mum went, Margaret Thatcher's been elected Prime Minister. Ruined the day for me. To be honest with you, that was that day. But I've been to most of them. Yeah. And I've seen some good ones and a lot of shit.
Well, you started losing then in 78 to Ipswich.
I went to 78. Yeah, that was the first one.
1-0. Yeah.
Then Man United. The one that was awful was the West Ham week.
And then
Brussels.
Trevor Brooking.
Four days later.
Oh, God.
It was bad. But, you know, well, I've seen them win.
Well, I'm a bit younger than you, so I was only 10 then. So my first ever live final, I watched 79 with my cousins. My dad was there, and then he went out with the team that night, which was amazing. And nowadays, thinking about something like that would be just incredible. But
no, what would you say to them?
Well, my dad was sort of friendly with Brian Talbot, so I don't know. My mum absolutely hates football. She comes from a massive family in Tottenham, as you know, and all my family are Tottenham, and every wedding or bar mitzvah or anything we've ever been to that side, we're the only Arsenal people there. And it's brilliant. My dad's always shouting out something. It's quite embarrassing.
It sounds like an away wedding. I like the idea of this. No shirts.
We was at my cousin's bar mitzvah when Arsenal played Man United. Do you remember when David Platt scored and he rose like a salmon to header it in?
Great header.
Yeah, yeah, and you didn't have phones like these phones out. We had radios on, or my dad did under the table. Something, we all had like something going on under the table. And they did a speech and David Platt scores and we all bang the table because we can't go yes or anything. We just all go, oh, like this, right? And everyone looks at us, but they just know Ian.
Could have been worse. Could have been a funeral, couldn't it?
Yeah.
They're doing eulogy and you're going, yes!
I've had a radio on in a church wedding once when I don't know what match it was. And I actually, it's got to be about 15, 20 years ago. And when they walked down the aisle, we scored. And I had to sit down because I couldn't cope. I can't remember what match it was. But look, you know what happens when the fixtures come out. The first thing I do is look to see what bar mitzvahs or weddings are coming out, anything like that. And I go, oh, shit, I hope it's moved to a Monday night. Because it is just...
bar mitzvah for the wedding?
My family, real quick, Amanda, because that's so funny, not expecting at all, right? Euro 2004, my cousin's getting married, and everyone's like, oh, that's the day of the final, and we're like, we don't have to worry about it. Greece aren't gonna get anywhere, are they? We don't have to worry. At that point, we're like, England aren't gonna get to the final, so we really don't have to worry. And whoopsie daisy, I think most of us were in the car park in my, you know, like buried into my uncle's like little, you know, RV that he used to take on the road and stuff like that. And the rest is history. But it's really funny when stuff like that happens at family events. Back in the day, 78 World Cup, I remember being in a car park in one of those VWs, you know, like my uncle's that had a little sink in it at the time. It had a sink in it. So you thought, oh, my God, he's going places. He's got a sink in his bloody VW. I mean, yeah, but anyway.
No one has ever said he's got a sink. He's going places. That's a great, I'm going to try and get that sentence.
Get that in, Ian.
Totally yours, Ian. Totally yours.
It's brilliant, though. Because when I was getting married with my ex, when we went to look at a hall, it was in November. So me and my dad are standing there, went, okay, what date? He said to the man, we need this date. He went, why? He said, because it's international weekend. Otherwise, there's a risk that Arsenal will be playing.
Outstanding.
He looked at us like, my mum just gives up. Well, she's been a football widower for 60 odd years. Yeah, of course she does. She's like, she doesn't talk to my dad if we lose. You know, she'll talk to me.
I went to the Champions League final against Barcelona on my son's birthday, my son Elliot, who's not into football at all. And it was his, I don't know, seventh birthday or something like that, eighth birthday. And I said to him, look, you're going to have lots of birthdays. This could probably be the only Champions League final we ever get to. I was hoping that wasn't the case, but it turned out that way. Yeah. And he understood. Yep. He did. I mean, we had him adopted shortly after, but he's apparently he's fine.
But you know what? Unless you're into football, unless you are passionately into it, you don't get it. So most of my girlfriends are not into football. Some are Spurs fans, but they're not really into
it. They're not into football then, are they?
Yeah, exactly. And
Boom, Kev.
I don't think I've got any friends that are in like Arsenal fans, as in with certain crowds. And they'll go, fancy coming out Thursday night? And I go, can we make it Friday? make it Friday. I'm like, this Friday's a much better night to go out. They go, why? Who are you playing? They just know. And I think unless you're in that sort of world, it doesn't make sense. You know, I've refused jobs before because you've had to work on a Saturday. I'm not going to work on a Saturday. It's just not going to happen. But anyway, enough about all that. We could talk about nonsense all day long.
We could talk about your Saturday jobs all day long.
Because I was at Highbury, so I never got a job on a Saturday. But Ian, let's talk about you. So tell us, how did you start supporting Arsenal?
7 years old, I think. My dad took me to Highbury, and it was a night game, actually. I remember coming up the steps into the ground, and the lights and the red shirts, they just come out, and I was just captivated that moment. I mean, he actually took me to West Ham first for a daytime game when I was about five. And I remember sitting on the touchline, and Bobby Moore ran over and took the ball from just next to me and took a throw. And I thought, wow, that's wow. Well, he had great legs, actually, is what I thought. He had really, you know, those little tight 60s shorts, remember? And then I went to Arsenal, and the red shirts and the floodlights and the green grass, and I was just gone. I mean, I was captivated from that moment.
So at Highbury, where did you sit? What stand were you?
Oh, no, we stood up. We stood up in the North Bank. We stood
You were North Point, but...
Yeah. I was actually in the schoolboys first. In the schoolboys, which is was down in front of the West Stand, yeah. And then... and then when you're about, I don't know, nine, what would happen is for about 10 minutes before the end, they'd open the gate into the North Bank, and we'd go through the gate into the North Bank. And then at some point we went, okay, I'm grown up enough to stand in the North Bank now. And we moved in there, and we used to stand behind the goal. And that was our spot for the rest of the time I was at Highbury until the last 7 or 8 years when I got a seat. In basically just behind where I used to stand in the schoolboys.
Right, so you was in the West.
Yeah.
And then we get into the 80s and we have Terry Neal and Don Howe. And do you remember, because obviously you're a tiny little bit older than me, do you remember the slow hand clap?
The slow hand? Not particularly, actually.
You don't remember that? So when we were rubbish, because we were rubbish at those times, weren't we? Where we just... slow hand clap during a game at different parts. Did you hear it, Kev?
Yeah. I used to come up. Obviously, I wasn't full time then. I was a schoolboy, and we used to come up and watch the games. And I remember the slow hand claps like it was yesterday.
Yeah,
there was like 20,000 in the stadium.
Yep. Yeah,
and there weren't much happening on the pitch.
No,
and it was terrible. It really was.
So I used to sit on my seat in the East Stand upper and put my legs over and just sit and be bored and slow hand clap. And it was like, that's why when we had Wenger football and the kids came through then and watched football and they didn't know they were born because that's all they knew. Yeah. And then obviously through the 80s. As you said, we had West Ham, then Brussels. I remember going to school thinking, well, it's all right. We lost to West Ham. We'll beat, you know, I can't remember the
Valencia.
Name. Valencia. My dad went. I wasn't old enough to go. I was thinking, all right, well, we didn't beat West Ham. Didn't really know any West Ham fans at that time. Thought we would easily beat Valencia and then ended up crying at school.
And then, by the way, after Valencia, we had two games away at Wolves and Middlesbrough, and we got beat 5-0 in the last game, and I can't remember which one, and we didn't qualify for the UEFA Cup because of that. It was just like the worst end to the season. I went to 62 games that year, home and away. I mean, I was really into it at that point. Yeah, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I mean, we had Liam Brady playing for us, so I was happy to watch him anywhere. First real hero.
Yeah, and mine. And mine, yeah, he was, and my dad's as well. But and then
underrated,
Amanda.
When you look at some of the great players.
I want to ask Ian, what did he think when the club
what you cut out, Ian?
When the club sold Liam Brady, what did he think?
Oh, I mean, I was gutted. I know you were talking about, you know, the book that I've written. And there were two moments of massive disappointment in my life. One was Paul Weller splitting up the jam. And the other one was Liam Brady leaving Arsenal. I couldn't, I was completely gutted because I loved watching that left foot of his. And my son, who's quite a keen footballer, my youngest, he's left footed. And he did a pass when he was about 6 or 7. And it was just the same shape as Liam Brady used to do. And it instantly transported me back.
Yeah.
It's nothing like a cultured left foot like that. because it's an unusual shape. You know, I can't do that on a pitch. I can't do it with my right foot either, to be perfectly honest. And I just, yeah, I love watching Brady play. I mean, I really did.
You know, and you know, you think back and you think how lucky you were to have him. But obviously then when, like, we start to go mid-80s and George Graham walks, what did you think when George Graham got appointed?
Do you know what? I didn't know a huge amount about him. He'd done well at Millwall, right? And I thought, all right, he's... I mean, I know a lot more now, speaking to Lee Dixon every week and talking to some of the boys who are in that team and Kev. I wasn't sure. But then what he started to do was bring in some of the kids through. And suddenly you thought, oh, yeah, this is... That's... I don't know, as a fan, obviously it's great you spend 50 million quid on a superstar player. But when you get a homegrown kid like Rocky... or, you know, Paul Davis and players, and you think, oh, man, this is what you want to see. And I love that he was doing that. I genuinely did. And it was a thrill, really. I love that team.
Yeah. We love you, Kev.
No, listen, Kev, you used to give me plenty of stick, you, Amanda, from the top stand. No, but Ian, what I want to ask you, Ian, is, for me, what were your thoughts, you know, when in that first season where... Obviously, we get to a final, the League Cup final, don't we? And the trilogy against Spurs, because everybody seems to know where they are. I'm sure. I know we'll get onto other things a bit further down, but that trilogy against Tottenham.
Yeah.
Did you go to all of the games?
I didn't. Do you know what? I didn't. I went to the home leg, and we got beat in the home leg.
1-0. Yeah.
Got beat 1-0, and then we somehow managed to win. Get a result in the second leg, and then they do the draw, don't they? They toss the coin on the pitch, and we and the Arsenal fans love it. No, I watched it on the TV actually. I watched that game on the telly, and we got battered for most of it, didn't we? I mean, we genuinely got battered, and we nicked it at the end. And I think there's an argument to say I've never actually been happier watching a football game. When Ian Allenson somehow, and then Rocky scores that winning goal, and I was watching it wherever. I think I was at home and I was jumping about just like everybody else. I mean, I just, wow, we've beaten Tottenham when we got to the final, and then we beat Liverpool when Ian Rush scores.
Yeah.
And I thought, how beautiful is that? That was, yeah, I went to the final. That was a very good day out. That was a moment, I think. I mean, I spoke to somebody who supported Spurs who said that was the moment when we got better than Tottenham. That moment, because they had quite a good team in the early 80s, Tottenham.
Yeah, they did.
And what have you. And that semi-final when we beat them, that was the time when we sort of went, London is red. And sort of has been ever since until the last couple of seasons. And will be again very soon.
But it was interesting, wasn't it? Because it's our era. And obviously, Kev being on the pod, we just chat so much about... then that I feel quite bad for the people that are young enough only for the Wenger era, because I don't we
oh,
all
the
of us,
suffering that they've had the Wenger
no I mean they don't know suffering like we had, and then
they don't.
Then George Graham walks in, and like you, Ian, I didn't know much about him, because I got asked this on a pod once, what did you think when George Graham got signed? To be fair, I was only 17, so I was like, didn't know who he was. I was like, when you grow up and you become a football fan, you just go with it, whether they're rubbish or good. You just go with it, don't you? So I didn't know any good. You know, I wasn't old enough really to enjoy 1979. As I said, mid-80s was for me. So my first ever live final was Liverpool. I had an amazing seat. I was on the steps as they walked up. So I don't know how we got these tickets. But so for me, and then the year later, we go and stuff it up by Gus Caesar. To Luton.
Poor Gus. Here she goes again.
Poor Gus. Gus Caesar. I'm not allowed to. My dad goes mental if I even say his name.
Put a dollar in the jar.
Gus Caesar was one of them. The other one was Nelson Vivas at Leeds. I mean, that one gets me going every bleeding time. When we let Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank go at the back post. So we all have our moments, but Gus Caesar in that final, that was pretty bad. That was bad.
That was, for me, the pinnacle.
Ridiculous.
And then, so we're expected to go and beat Luton. And then next year, obviously, Anfield 89, which I'm not even going to mention, but Ian.
Please mention it, Ian. Where were you?
Where were you?
I was at my friend's. I was watching it at a friend's house. I couldn't get a ticket, so I watched it at a friend's house. And when Michael Thomas scored the goal, because I got to be honest, I didn't think we had much of a chance. I thought we'd blown it against Wimbledon and what was it? Derby. You know, the week before, I really thought we'd blown it because that whole season we should have won the title, and then we blew it. And then so I didn't have that much in the way of expectations. But as it went on, there was something about the atmosphere of that game. I don't know. I haven't watched. It was quite a sort of warm, sticky night, wasn't it? Yeah, and when it happened, when Michael Thomas, well, first of all, when he missed that chance, when he missed basically the same chance with about 10 minutes to go, and we thought, oh no, he's blown it. And then he gets it again and he scores. And I was sort of jumping around the living room in the same shape as Michael Thomas. I was sort of on my head. I mean, and my mate is sitting there, who's a Chelsea fan, just laughing at me, just because he just thought how brilliant football is. You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah, one of the finest nights of my life. And Kev, we've talked about this plenty of times. I've never seen anything like it. And for quite a while afterwards, all my credit cards and debit cards, my PIN number was 26 5 1989, right? Because I like that. I like that date. Yeah. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen, possibly in sport, to be honest with you. 9 month season goes down to the last minute. It's never happened again.
Top two as well, isn't it, Ian?
Beautiful. You know, absolutely beautiful. Two. And they were a very good team, that Liverpool team. Really, really good. But, you know, we did what we had to do. I mean, the party must have been something, Kev.
It was something and a half. Listen, I was saying to the girls before that, I remember we left Anfield. Do you know what? The Liverpool staff were fantastic. They brought their champagne in.
Yeah, I heard this.
Ronnie Moran and all that. They came in and, you know, had a drink and said, you know, anybody who comes here and wins 2-0 deserves it, etc. So, but the funny part was when you leave Anfield, you're going down the East Lancs Road, there was a massive Everton pub on the corner. So, you know, you're driving out of Anfield and obviously the Reds are crying. Then you get onto the East Lancs and there's a massive conga. Everton conga going down the East Lancs, going to this pub. It was unbelievable. Honestly, we're really.
You know
what,
Kev? It was interesting actually because I still am finding out little stories about what happened to me on that in '89. So my dad. No, Ian, I wasn't. When we were coming back, apparently we stopped at a service station, and apparently Arsenal fans were doing the conga, and my dad only mentioned it to me last week or the week before, and I went, oh, I don't remember that, and he went. They were doing the conga around the service station, man. Don't you remember? And I went, absolutely not. I've got snippets of after the game. I can remember everything before it, but I can't remember coming. I saw the coach.
You were in shock.
Do you think the shock thing you're talking about, Kev, when Michael Thomas scored the winning goal, yeah. I don't think I've ever heard a noise like that of football. I mean, you tell me if you disagree with this, but there was a moment of, bloody hell, what the hell have we just witnessed here? And then the sound of the Arsenal guys, the Arsenal fans going nuts. I just think there was a pause for about half a second while everyone just took it in.
A gasp of breath, isn't it? Yeah, intake of breath, yeah.
Because you don't see stuff like that very often or hardly ever. And I love that moment, of course.
I remember him messing up, and I had a word with him about that. I said, could you have not scored the first chance? I said, I was nearly on my way home. And when he scored, where we were, I don't remember my feet touching the ground.
Oh,
it went mental. And I can only, that noise you're experiencing, and I can still see it in my vision, you know, like my memory. As I said, I don't remember much after. Little things happened. And I just remember every single Arsenal fan going ballistic. And then what you do, Ian, you know, and this is obviously the Jewish in me, I then went, calm down, there's still 5 minutes to go, because we don't know how long there is to go. Not to try to calm everyone down, this is Arsenal.
I'd have been going, mind me glasses, will you?
I was like,
I've got these £200, these designer. Get away from me.
My dad is obsessed with a stopwatch, so we would always know exactly to the second how long we had left, like when the referee would do 90 plus 4 minutes or whatever. And I remember going to everyone, calm down. I said, no, just calm down. I said, I can't cope. I was shaking, like, it is the most memorable moment. And obviously everyone knows my stories, but it was that noise. I walked out in shock. We were in shock. I remember the Everton policewoman. I remember those sort of things. It was just the Evertonian. It was just mental. But, and you know what? Thank God we all support Arsenal and not that lot. Because my Spurs friends are so bloody miserable. Honestly, the fact that we became Wenger, the Invincibles, the Doubles, Sol Campbell came to us. I couldn't be a Spurs fan. I mean, if Tony Adams ever went to Tottenham, I would.
But you say that because you're an Arsenal fan. So yeah. You can't really say that. And you know, what's really interesting is that moment of 89, to me, when you look at, it's in the top five greatest sporting moments in history in England. You got Virginia Wade winning Wimbledon. You've got England winning the 66 World Cup, right, Ian?
Yeah.
Maybe Andy Murray eventually. I mean, is he one of ours? I don't know. He's Scottish, really, isn't he?
Come on.
Yes,
that was nice. That was a great.
It was a great moment. It was a great moment. And that's and maybe the Olympics 2012. I thought that was a phenomenal time for our country.
I just recorded the there's a like a Imagine program on BBC about the 2012 opening ceremony.
Wow.
I love because I met Danny Boyle. I saw him at a train station and I just ran up to him. I says, that Olympic opening ceremony, mate, that was one of the best things I've ever seen. And I love the zombie movies as well.
Yeah, because he's inspired by his 28 Days Later. 28 Days Later, I think it is. Yeah, I mean, he's a great filmmaker. The whole thing was a spectacle. It was amazing. And 89, when you think about it, I think because it's Arsenal became a dartboard and a laughing stock in some ways, which really upsets me, is that was monumental. You know, it would be like, it's a little bit like Fabio Capello's Milan team that beat Barcelona. You know, there's just moments in football where it's no one gives you a chance.
Agreed. And the fact,
right? And the fact that that happened and we did that, I think it's definitely top three sporting moments ever.
Can I just say though, in terms of Arsenal and Kev, you'll, I don't know what you think of this. 91, when we'd won the title.
Yeah.
And we spanked Liverpool, what was it, 3-0?
Well, Manu.
Manu, sorry. 3-1. We spanked, 3-1. 3-1. Yeah. And we're all at Highbury. Can we swear on this podcast?
Of course. Cool.
Yes.
When we're all singing, you can stick your fucking 2 points up your ass for the entire game. That to me felt more Arsenal, you know?
Yeah.
What we did at Anfield was a sort of magical moment. And when you go, this is why we love sport, right? For this, that particular thing, no matter who you support. But 1991 was for us. That was a purely selfish, this is for us. And I'm sure the players felt it as well. I mean, it was fun just putting two fingers up to absolutely everyone else. If I'm honest, I sort of preferred that.
Yeah. I mean, we've kind of done it two or three times now, really, haven't we? Like with the two fingers. If you look at what other team in the league has ever gone and won the title at three rival away, right?
Oh, yeah, Anfield, Old Trafford, and White Hart Lane.
Who's done that?
No.
And that is why I said, lucky we're Arsenal fans and not Tottenham fans, because we've won the league there more than they have. So we have this over them.
I love that. I love that stat. Every time I hear that, I think we have.
It's great.
We absolutely have.
And
it's absolutely,
you know, you know, my world is full of Tottenham fans and it's hilarious. They are so bitter and nasty about it. It's fantastic. You live on memories. I said, well, at least I was alive before, you know.
We
you
have memories. We actually have memories.
You won the league. Exactly. You weren't even alive when you last won the league. But
I always said, like, when I get married, that my walking down the aisle song is the classic, we won the league at Shite Hart Lane. It's happening. There's no doubt about it.
So,
I can't wait. You'll all be there.
Kev's going to be an usher and I'm going to be the maid of honour and we're going to be singing it down the aisle, aren't we, Kev?
No,
he's not no usher. He's like, you know, he's right there with all the best men. How about that? Ian, I'd like to ask you a quick question because you guys brought up a really good point. Amanda brought up the question of who knew George Graham, but the juxtaposition to that, right, is we had that in succession. Who is George Graham? No one really knew much about him. Of course, he was at Millwall and he'd done well. But then Arsene Wenger. And really, there was that, who the hell is he, right?
Yeah.
everyone thought that we'd made a mistake hiring him. No one even knew who he was. So it's interesting that you guys were talking about the George Graham moment, because I felt similarly. Wenger was very much like that, wasn't he?
I mean, I was pleased. Listen, I didn't know who he was, but you know what? He seemed, I like the professor thing. I like the fact he seemed like a thoughtful guy. I mean, I wasn't thinking, oh, wow, this is amazing. You know, it's a guy, he's been where? Japan? Grampus 8, is it? Who are they? So I didn't have a lot of expectation, but, you know, it didn't take long, did it? Let's be fair. I mean, the first season we played some absolutely lovely football. The first time Patrick Vieira turned up on the pitch against Sheffield Wednesday and we went, hello, this is something different, isn't it? And it was very quickly that we realised, actually, this guy might be a genius. So it didn't take long. That was the point. You know, we're all going to give a manager 6 months, a year. Well, in the first, well, we won the double the second year he was there, didn't we? And that was, you think, okay, this guy seems to know what he's doing.
But there's a slight difference, though, that when Wenger came in, we'd already had winning trophy mentality with Graham. When Graham came in,
there was no foundation.
There was nothing there.
Different.
So that's a fair point.
So our expectations when Wenger came were a little bit higher. We wanted to carry on what George had done. So basically, we all wanted Johan Cruyff. That was what was being touted around. Arsene Wenger who? I'm sorry, if anyone says they knew that he was going to be what he was going to be, I would dispute that. But it was just a slightly, you can't compare it because we'd already started winning. We'd won 89 before Wenger got there, you know, and after George was there. So it's just slightly different. But so we've chatted all about the old stuff and we will have you back on, Ian, again to talk even more about the old. But we want to talk to you about your new book. So To Be Someone.
Yes.
I just want to tell you a funny little story and then we'll talk. So yesterday I was on my Facebook and a solicitor friend of mine was talking about your book. Now, how weird is this? He said, is anyone reading To Be Someone by Ian Stone? It's absolutely brilliant. I'm loving it. Great. And he went to my old school. So was you at JFS? Is that what?
I was at Jewish Free School. Yes, I was. So, and I talk about being at that school in the book.
So I said to him, have you got any questions? Because really weirdly, I'm interviewing him tomorrow. I just can't believe someone's even mentioned this. And he said, just tell him it is a brilliant book and I'm loving it. And he was at my school, but I think he's a bit older than you or younger than you. I can't remember, but he's loving it. So,
He's one of those two things.
He's older or younger, but he's a Chelsea season ticket holder, but he's loving the book anyway.
Well, that's very nice. That's very nice.
Really enjoying it. So tell us all about it.
It's all right. It's I mean, it's called To Be Someone. It's part social history, part autobiography, and part love letter, if you like, to Paul Weller and The Jam, who I grew up with and loved from the first moment I heard them. You know, it was one of those, I was in my bedroom when I was about 14 years old, and John Peel used to play all this sort of new wave stuff, as he called it back then. And he went, this one's In the City by The Jam. And it just blew my head off. I mean, I never heard anything like it. You know, music is so sort of, when you hear a bit of music that you love, especially when you're like 13, 14, 15, around that age, it was a huge moment for me. And I just followed them. After that, I had two great passions in life at that time. Arsenal was one and The Jam were the other. And I followed them both all around the country. And I, you know, it was tremendous fun.
And I love that you wrote this. So my brother-in-law, he's obsessed with Paul Weller, and I told him that I was talking to you today, and he's a Tottenham fan, but he loves you regardless. And he was saying that, because I was telling him that, you know, I just texted him and he said the two worst moments in his life was like when The Jam broke up and Arsenal sold Liam Brady. And then he said, you know, me too. He said, when they split in 82, I felt so lost. I also then broke up with my girlfriend. It was completely insane. I was totally fucked. And yeah, it's the thing.
I was gutted when he broke up with his girlfriend. I was really upset.
The style of him, he was more than just a musician. And the style of that, I think, would you say that they were the first kind of real stylish? I mean, there was a lot of the mod stuff and, you know, the mopeds and all of that, but there was something about him that was an enigma almost.
Well, look, I mean, here's the thing, right? I had to interview him the other day. I spoke to him the other day for a sort of style website called Mr. Porter. And we did an interview and I was asking him about his different fashion choices over the last five decades. And some he preferred to others, you know. And we talked about the clothes. And he wasn't so keen on the Style Council clothes, clobber, as the same. We all felt the same way. But for the Jam, yeah, he was quite a stylish guy, obviously. But he said to me, he looked at the clothes that the Beatles were wearing, and he felt the same way about that. I don't think he was the first, but he obviously has a sense of style about him, and he still looks brilliant at 62 or whatever. And yeah.
He elevated the fashion game, I think, a little bit.
I love those black suits. Those black suits and those white shirts and those Jam shoes. That was a great look for me. And I always had a bit of the mod thing about me. So I love the music, and he's got the mod thing going on. And he's singing songs about stuff that I hadn't heard artists sing about before. He's singing songs about urban deprivation and police brutality, right?
Right.
You ain't getting that from, I don't know, Lieutenant Pigeon or whatever the, you know.
No, or Bardo.
So that stuff really spoke to me, right? It really, really did. But what people have said to me, and I really find this gratifying, they say, it doesn't have to be about the Jam. In the same way that Fever Pitch, you don't have to love Arsenal or football to read and enjoy Fever Pitch. People have said they're not necessarily into the Jam, but they just know that when music is such an important thing in so many people's lives, and it's about growing up and about being a teenager and how awkward I used to be with the opposite sex, still am actually most of the time with the opposite sex. And you know, it's about that. It's about that coming of age from 14 to 19. And that's what I wanted to write about. And essentially the idea behind it is Paul Weller taught me to be someone. Right?
There's nothing. That's beautiful. That's so beautiful. There's nothing like a coming of age story. I love those movies as well. I could see this being turned into a film, actually, because it has that essence and that heart of a coming of age story. And I wanted to ask you something.
Tom Cruise is
in. Tom Cruise is going to play you.
Very, very excited.
But Casey and Amanda and I talk about this a lot lately, and it's very topical. One of the things I think that's interesting about your book, Ian, is that, you know, you talk about the social changes, and in that period, in that late 70s, England was going through a massive transition with the unions and with racism, and there was violence on the streets. And now we're fast forwarding here to 2020. And
same.
And that's what I wanted to ask you, with everything going on in the world today and what you wrote about through your own coming of age eyes, you know, even back then, and your memory bank, nothing much has changed then, has it?
Well, I'd like to think there's a bit less prejudice. I would like to think that, but and I've spoken to Kev about the prejudice that he's faced and I've faced. I mean, I've got anti-Semitic stick when I've been on stage. But I remember in 1978 going on the Rock Against Racism March, first music thing that I ever went to. And there's people doing Nazi salutes as we're going past the East End. And I'm thinking, hang on a minute, 40 years ago, my grandfather was having to put up with Oswald Mosley going through the streets in the East End in the 30s. I'm having to deal with the same shit in 1978. People are having to deal with the same shit now. So it doesn't go away, which I think hopefully when people read it, they'll find it relevant to today. And a number of people have said that to me, and I'm gratified that it has relevance, because it's, you know, I know it feels like a long time ago, and it was a long time ago. Anyway, anything pre-internet feels like 1,000 years ago. But I think I'd like to think it is still relevant, because you know what? There's still people growing up today. You know what I mean? So hopefully they get something out of it.
I was going to ask you, when you're on stage and stuff and you get anti-Semitism, how do you deal with it? Because when I've encountered it on social media, growing up, I never encountered anything. During my work life, going into London, I never encountered a thing. But social media, when I sort of came out and announced I was Jewish, because I used to watch a lot of anti-Semitic stuff go on, which I couldn't believe, I had a lot of people come at me for being Jewish. They didn't like the fact that I was Jewish, and then didn't like the fact that who I was. And I've always said to them, don't like me for who I am, not for my religion. I totally get that, but not my religion. So how do you, because how I handle it, and this is what I tell Jewish people to do, just handle it with sarcasm. Just don't bait that, don't go for them, don't do anything like that. Just make them look small and stupid. But
well, I mean, I know what you're saying. I mean, I'm assuming all of us have had stick, right? Sophie, I guess you've had it for being Greek. Kev, I know you've had it, right?
Totally. Yeah.
So we've all had stick from time to time. yes, sarcasm is great, but sometimes sarcasm is not enough. I mean, I got some guy doing gas noises at me at a gig in Birmingham, and I jumped off the stage and dragged him out of the room. I wouldn't advise that, particularly as a course of action. And the weird thing was, when I jumped down and had a go at him, he suddenly appeared a lot bigger than when I was standing 5 foot above him. But I still did it anyway. What was beautiful about that, this is a club in Birmingham called the Glee Club, which I love. That was on the Thursday night. On the Saturday, when I went back, they introduced me with "Let's get ready to rumble." And they played the Rocky theme. And I you try and deal with it with sarcasm. Sometimes it gets you. Sometimes it gets you. And in the book, there's quite a lot of passages about, like, when I was at the Jewish free school in the 70s, and the Holloway Boys School would come up to our school and do Nazi salutes outside the school gates every lunchtime. Yeah. I mean, I think in the end it was part of the curriculum. But, you know, what have you got today? I got maths, double anti-Semitism, and geography. Oh, and it was, of course it was shocking. But you don't get stuff like that quite so often. So I'd like to think things are maybe moving forward a little bit. But I don't want to, this was my story, and I didn't want to shy away from some of the more brutal aspects of growing up in the 70s. You know, the violence, the anti-Semitism, the racism. But hopefully there's some funny stuff in there as well. So, you know.
Kev, do you know what's interesting, actually? I've never spoken to you about when you were growing up, what it was like with the racism. We've never covered that.
I think we have, but
we have on past.
We have covered it, but
football wise, I'm talking about.
No, it was brutal. Yeah. It was brutal, real brutal. I mean, you're talking 1970s and 80s. There, you know, I'm coming from Brixton, and I'm finding myself. I'm traveling around London on my own.
Tell me this story, Kev, when you were 10 years old and you're going training at Chelsea and driver just gives you stick.
Well, I think I was about 11 at the time. Just gone to secondary school, 11, 12 years old, and come out of the train station, and I'm walking up to Chelsea, and the taxi driver like kind of pulls over, still rolling, the taxi's rolling. And winds the window down and just racially abuses me all the way up to the stadium.
Oh my God. Wanker.
Yeah, well, right? Of course. Yeah.
You know, you little black, this, you know, well, I was quite big. So, you know, you black this, you black that, blah, blah, blah. But it was the norm.
This wasn't
shocking like people are outraged now. This was the norm. You know, used to get. That's when the stop and search and stuff like that was on. There's quite a bit going on about stop and search now. But do you remember the sus laws back in the day, Ian? Sus laws back in the day were in Brixton were brutal. Anytime you got seen by the walking police or the van, the Mariah vans or whatever, they'd stop you and they'd search you. They'll turn your pockets out and stuff like that. So it was serious. And then obviously you're getting into... I started getting into football a lot more, obviously gone moving up the ladder, and you find yourself, you're traveling around on my own late at night. The amount of times I've been chased by police and all this kind of thing, it was madness. And getting racially abused by opposition players, parents. But that's what you had. I used it as fuel. Always used it as fuel for me because I wanted to get out of Brixton, if I'm honest. You know, Brixton's great and all that, but it's always an achievement if you can get out. I wanted to go on. I didn't want to be traveling in from Brixton all to get to London Colney. I wanted to be living in Enfield and Adley Wood and Cockfosters. That's where I wanted to be, where it's 15 minutes down the road. But in order to do that, you have to do good. You have to be good. So, you know, I just tried to use everything I had to use that negative and turn it into a positive. But I know what you're saying, Amanda, where you say you use fun, don't you? It's fun and it's...
Well, you know, I get that for sexism
Belittling. He's kind of belittling them.
Yeah, definitely.
But that don't always work.
No, of course not.
As Ian quite rightly said, you know.
being on a stage. I'm not on a stage. It's very different. I probably would have reacted like that. I couldn't stand gas noises. It would just send me spiraling. And I totally understand that. But being on social media, Kev, you've seen the sexism and how I handle it. And they just literally shy away because they're so embarrassed that I've shown them up. Because that's what I teach a lot of the girls on there. Just show them up. That's it.
With your knowledge. Just let your knowledge speak.
Yeah, no, don't. Just say to, just, I've got a fantastic meme. You know the one I'm talking about. So where, when they say go back to the kitchen, I say, why don't you know what to do with us in the bedroom? And they don't come back. They can't. They've nothing to come back with. And I think instead of rowing, which is what they want, right, they want to bait. I can't be doing with it. I'm 51 at the end of the month. Do you think I can even be arsed with these idiots? He doesn't bother me.
Do you know what? It was really hard when I started working in the film industry back in 91 for 20th Century Fox, even in London. And the film industry then was very different to what it is now. And Ian, you probably know, a little bit like sports, Casey and Amanda, like very male dominated.
Yeah.
Very difficult to climb the ladder. And back then, I know it sounds weird, but when you did have a Greek name, it wasn't as easy. Things weren't as easy. Things were looked at a little bit differently. And then when you throw on top of that, then you're like, oh, I'm gay as well. It's like, wow, double whammy. So I think we all have our journeys and our experiences of what that looked, what you know, what kind of like. Sexism, well, hopefully, stereotyping. Yeah.
Hopefully, when people read the book, they can connect with it in the way that, you know, I've suffered. I haven't been abused for being Jewish, say, but I've been abused for being Greek, and I've been abused for being gay. And I just think hopefully people can relate to that sort of stuff, really, because we've all had to put up with stuff. We have suffered. I mean, the Jews have suffered the worst, I have to say, but that's, you know, that was a joke, by the way.
As you know, it's only me and you are laughing.
I was just waiting.
I think Kev was deep breathing then.
Oh, listen, I've got the bag over my face.
Yeah, but anyway, no, that's the point, really. You're telling your own story, whatever that story happens to be, and you try and you hope that people can relate to it. You really do. The fact that Tottenham fans can relate to it is very gratifying to me, I must say.
Do you know what's funny, though, Ian? I was out with my son this morning and, you know, he's 17 and he's very, you know, liberal and everything's, it's got to be right. And he's got a lovely heart and a lovely soul and he's, you know, he's just lovely boy. And he said to me, and I said, oh, yeah, I am definitely an ist. He went, what, mum? I went, I'm teamist. I hate Tottenham. I hate them with a passion. So I'm teamist. He went, oh, you're ridiculous.
He's a good boy. He's a good boy. By the way, I have to say, I've got to get to the vet for 5 o'clock because I have to pick up some insulin for my dog.
No.
That's not a joke, by the way.
Isn't a joke, and I know that's real. But
well, honestly, what breed is your dog, Ian?
He's a spaniel. He's a spaniel, and he's getting on a bit, and he's a slightly diabetic dog. So we have to, honestly, it's ridiculous the things you have to do. But anyway, I've got to go and pick up some insulin from the vet in a short while.
So
we'll have to get you on again sometime.
Well, it's been lovely to chat, guys. It really has.
Really nice talking to you, Ian. As always.
There's a part two in here.
Definitely part two, definitely. But no, we could talk to you for ages. I didn't take any notice of the time, so I do apologise. It's way over an hour. So as I said, everyone, you're going to be listening to this on Monday or Tuesday onwards. And hopefully,
Wembley.
We're
not, but they are going. Yes,
we're not going.
Preparing for Ian and Amanda's, you know, kind of apology to me and Casey.
Yeah.
We'll have a little competition. Who's suffering more? It's like suffering top trumps is what we're doing.
Ian, tell everyone where they can find you. I know a lot of Arsenal fans know where they can find you, but tell them where they can find the book and stuff like that before you take the baby to the docks.
Book is available on Amazon and Waterstones and Foils and hopefully in bookshops as well. It's out there. To Be Someone. It's published by Unbound. And I'm very proud of it. As far as I'm concerned, I have been in this house for 4 months and I'm losing my shit, if I'm totally honest with you. But at some point, hopefully stand-up comedy will start again and I can be out and about, which would be very nice because my family want to kill me.
Yes, I think all families feel the same.
They're not living with comedians. But anyway, yes, I understand the point you're making. So hopefully that'll start again. But yes, to be someone is just, you know, go on the internet and it's out there.
Fantastic. Well, we wish you all the luck with that. And we all really want to thank you so much for coming on the Highbury Squad and chatting to us and having a laugh. And in these very strange times, it's so strange. But it's so strange that me and you could be doing a video on Monday apologising to Sophie and Kev that they were right and we were absolutely wrong.
I'd be very happy to do that as well.
Yeah, so would I. Right. Ian, thank you so much.
Thank you, mate.
All the best, guys. See you soon.
Ian, take care, mate.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, that was just fantastic. And I hope you all enjoy.
Ian. See you guys. I've got to run.
Bye.
See you, mate. He's a great guy. Great guy.
Top shelf geezer.
We're so pleased that he joined us on the Highbury Squad. And as I said, I will do a video if you're listening to this and we do manage to scrape by City and end up in the final that none of us can go to.
We don't want no videos off you, Amanda. You're a jinx.
We don't need them.
You're a jinx, you said, so we don't need it.
The She wore a yellow ribbon or I'll sing Wembley, whatever you want me to do. But
oh
I doubt
God, Kevin, you're cracking me up.
No, you know what I mean? Listen, you can't have it both ways. So do you know what, Amanda? You keep your singing till we get to the final.
Okay.
Yeah.
When we beat Chelsea.
Remember, this is going out after, and people will be like, going, oh, Kev, no, we were terrible. You never know. I'm trying to be positive.
Hey, if we lose, we lose. But do you know what? I want us to win so bad.
Get in.
Who's the other semi final?
Man United, Chelsea, isn't it?
There's the problem. United are like on fire, aren't they? They are absolutely on fire. It would be funny, wouldn't it, after I'm saying this, that it's a Chelsea-Arsenal final.
It will be a Chelsea-Arsenal final. It's going to be a repeat of 2017.
I think it's going to be City-United, which will be interesting if we don't get there.
Well, United have beaten City, two or three times this season, haven't they?
So that's it. This is an old-style pod from us. You can't see us, which is probably better today on a day of all days like this. Because I got my hair up. I look hot. Not hot.
You've done your walk.
I've got my curly hair out. Oh, this walk thing. This daily journal, by the way.
But people on Twitter won't know that because I only post occasionally, but Facebookers will. Oh. Yes. No, I'm
very proud of you. Very proud of you.
Listen, I went up the hill today and I was actually singing a little bit of the fears, didn't talk after, then got to the top and I wasn't out of breath for the first time ever. Not that anyone's interested, but I was so proud of myself. Oh,
fantastic, good. Amanda. Yeah. You keep it up, darling. You keep it up. You're doing a brilliant job.
But the news is that I may be going back to work very soon, so I'll have to go very early morning. Yep, no, that is good. So we divert. Right, guys, thank you so much. I've loved it. Ian was just awesome. I knew he would be because he's just too funny. And it was lovely talking about the old times as well. So, Kev, Soph, keep well. Until the next time we meet, always Arsenal.